Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
You can probably treat yourself to an ad-free upgrade or at least grab an extra latte after getting a Chime checking account with features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe. No minimum balance requirements and no monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. That's chime.com/goals24. Chime feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach-churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders. I'm your host, Kyle, and joining me today is Dan. Ooh, I should have asked you how to say this. Is it Rawitch?
Close, like an uncooked witch. Raw witch.
Raw witch. Okay, yeah. That was my initial guess, but then you I just had to change it on the fly for no reason. Dan is the founder and head trader at universityofoptions.com. He has 40 years of experience in the industry and the related fields. But before we start trying to mine that rich history for valuable lessons, let's get the promotional stuff out of the way so we can focus on the good stuff. So please feel free to reach out with any suggestions, corrections, or questions for future guests. You can do that via email at bandoftraders@gmail.com. You can join our free Discord server. Or you can even DM us on Twitter at financialinept1. And Dan, where can the people go to learn more about what you got going on?
Two places. They can just go to the website, which is universityofoptions.com. Or you can email me, dan@universityofoptions.com. And I've got some team members that help monitor the email, so it won't be too many.
Perfect. Okay. All those links are going to be in the episode description, so you can peruse them at your own convenience. But now that we got the business end done, let's get to know Dan. So Dan, tell me about your journey. How did you get started and interested in the markets?
Well, first of all, Kyle, I got to say thank you so much for having me. I love what you do.
Oh, well, thank you.
You have the perfect voice for this.
That's really the first time anyone said that.
Well, I always hear that I have a good face for radio, but
I got a good voice for radio. Is
that what you got a good voice, so that's good.
Appreciate that.
So, you know, probably go back to the beginning just a little bit, and we can always fast forward as you would like.
There's so much in there. I want to hear most of it if we can.
All right. So when I was in college, it was 1978. I was a sophomore in college. So yeah, I'm pretty old. And I was roommates with my sister, and she came home in this really nice sports car. It was an Alfa Romeo. And I was like, how did you do that? Because she was just working as a teller in the bank. And she said, well, they moved me from being a teller to getting loans as a loan officer. Mm. And I get paid a commission every time that I do one. And I was like, you get paid for giving people money? That's insane. So she set up an appointment with her boss, and he said, I think you'd be good, but you're really young. And back then at 19, I looked like I was 12.
Yeah.
I even tried to put fake gray hair in.
That's awesome.
It turned purple because you had to bleach it before you could dye it.
Right.
Oh my God. Backfired. And of course I had the fake glasses. These are real.
Yeah.
So I ended up interviewing with 12 different companies until somebody finally said, I don't think you're too young. And I'll never forget the meeting. Her name was Shelby Johnston, and the company was Guild Mortgage, which today is still a thriving company. And she said, the only thing is, I'm not going to spend any time training you because your likelihood of success is pretty low. So
at least they're honest.
They were. She was very honest. Yeah. She and her husband, Don, ended up being two of the best mentors of my life. And I became one of the top producers in the nation for Guild Mortgage by the time I was 20. So, and I think it was because I didn't know much. And when a realtor would ask me a question about a product, I would say, I'm not sure about that. Let me call my office and I'll talk right to the underwriter. And the realtors were blown away. They'd be like, you're admitting you don't know something? Everybody in your business just BS's.
Right.
So I thought, oh, there's something about being honest. Let's stick with that theme.
Yes.
So, but I remember during that period, I asked Shelby, where do we get the money? We're not a bank. Mm-hmm. So I know we're not lending deposits. She said, oh, that's a good question. We have a line of credit with the bank. It's very big, you know, in the millions. And when you loan officers all make loans, we bulk them together. And we sell them off on Wall Street. Mm-hmm. And that just sounded so cool to me. So I was like, there's somebody that does what I do, but in the multi-million dollar, you know, space. She said, yeah. I said, I want to do that. She goes, that's a pretty hard position to get, but, you know, we'll always support you. So long story short, I graduated college with the just, I don't know where it came from. I just needed to be on Wall Street. Mm-hmm. And one thing led to another. I'll skip tons of the details, but I ended up getting recruited by Bear Stearns, which at the time was the top bond firm in the nation. They and Goldman Sachs were really the big giants. And same kind of idea. I was just young and I was aggressive, and they trained me as a trader, and I loved it. But after a while, you know, maybe a couple of years, the lifestyle really burned me out. If you watched Wolf of Wall Street, that stuff's real.
It really was like that.
I mean, I'm sure that was a little overdone. Like, I never actually saw somebody having sex on the trading desk, but I saw most everything else. And in particular, they had a car service that would pick us up. They treated you like royalty. I mean, we stayed at the Helmsley Palace, for months at a time. And when the limo would pick us up, there were two other guys that were about my age. They were snorting coke all the way to work and home. Yeah. And the lifestyle just really got to me. So I just begged them for maybe a year. Let me go back to San Francisco. Let me work in the San Francisco office. And he said, well, you're going to make a lot less money. It's going to be a slightly different position. And that position actually ended up really giving me a lot of the basis for my knowledge in trading today, more so than being a trader on the desk.
Really?
Yeah, because as a trader on the desk, you'll get a call from one of the institutional sales guys and say, you know, bid me 10 million, Fannie Mae 30s. And so, you know, we would look at the market just like any of us can do. And I would decide where I wanted to be in that trade. Of course, I could look quickly and figure out how we were going to hedge that trade. And then I would just throw them out of bid.
So it wasn't nearly as much work. Like, you weren't having to do like the research and stuff. You were just basically like executing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I think that's the case with a lot of traders on Wall Street. They're different than the type of traders we all are today. But when they moved me to San Francisco, they made me, they put me in a position called asset liability manager. And my number one job was to meet with the bigger banks and help them balance their assets and liabilities. A lot of that revolved around, you know, buying and selling various derivatives and hedging the bank service portfolio, all that stuff. That was an interesting time because that's when all the savings and loans were just going bust. And the reason they're going bust is for 50 years, they made, you know, 30-year fixed rate loans at like 5%.
Right.
And now they're paying their depositors 13, 15%. It was a terrible. So my job was really to say, you got to take the pain now. You got to get rid of these assets and let's invest in something that makes a lot more sense. And for me, that was always just buying and selling mortgage-backed securities.
Right.
So that was a cool job. Then during that time period, the mortgage business was coming unglued. for the first time in many, many years, unglued in a good way, because rates began to fall. Mm-hmm. And I was noticing things like appraisals, even credit reports were taking weeks and weeks. So I got the idea and started a company called DataFax, which was a credit reporting firm.
I saw this in your cut sheet that you did some work on the actual, like the, you were one of the pioneers of like the credit system or the credit rating system.
Yeah. So that business just took off. Mm-hmm. And that was really a function of being in the right place at the right time. And I read a book at the time called Thriving on Chaos by Tom Peters. And that book was life-changing because things in the book, he was like, you should pay your customer service people a commission for every phone call they grab. Mm-hmm. Instead of them sitting around crying about who's going to grab the next call, let them compete for that call. And that was a game changer. And then
I just want to touch on that. It's funny how just giving your employees some piece of ownership or something, like having a stake in the company or the success of the business, like completely changes the culture.
It's amazing. And, you know, Netflix is famous for that. If you follow their leadership history, they really know how to treat their people. So on the same vein, our competitors were all hiring outside couriers. Because we physically, this is like fax machines were just invented.
Right.
They would print on that shiny paper and it would grow a tail because it didn't cut its pages. So some of the tails would go all through the office and you had to cut them off.
Oh my gosh.
It's amazing how far we've come. It's just crazy. So our competitors were starting to go to outside courier services to pick up that bag. And what we did was we looked for younger college students. This might be considered sexist in this time in life, but these were good looking younger guys because everyone that dispensed the credit reports typically were sort of grumpy women. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sexist. I have 3 daughters and 3 sisters. but we're going to play how we have to play.
Right.
So these guys would pick up the bag that had the applications that we were going to run the credit on. Mm-hmm. And they would shake it. They would pick up the competitors and they'd go, this one's heavier. Like, what's up? Haven't I been good to you? You know, and sort of in a flirty manner. And every time the woman would say, take 3 out and put them there. Just tell me what 3 you took.
I see what your game you're playing. Okay.
Yeah. And they all had the DataFax shirt on instead of, you know, FedEx or whatever. So, and they got paid a little bit for every application they brought in.
Right. I love that model and that mentality. That's you got to get your edges where you can, right? And just a little bit of friendliness can go a long way.
100%. Especially in that space. It was very competitive. We were young and we didn't have nearly the capital as our competitors. So again, long story short, and I realize these are actually short stories long, but we sold that company to TransUnion and we didn't want to sell, but they sent a guy out, their M&A guy. He was good. And he started showing us all the money they're spending in the space. And then he started showing us Equifax, all the money they were spending in the space. And he's just like, you guys are not going to be relevant. You're going to be insignificant within a couple of years. And saying that to, you know, a kid in his 20s, you're like, meh, you know, right, give him the bird and go away. But he kept at it to the point that we believed it. And thank God we did, because he was dead right. So we sold the business for lots of millions. And from there, I opened up a mortgage company. I did a lot of stupid things in between, which we can talk about if you want. Because I sound really smart when I do this, but I'm not.
But I think that's an interesting point, though. I mean, how many failures are behind every success, right?
Well, in my case, 3. So there are 3 things I did that did not work between the sale of DataFax and the start of the mortgage company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want to talk about any of those 3?
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah. You know, you get to a point where you're not ashamed of your past. You should own it.
Right.
Because it all got me where I am.
Exactly.
So first was Arby's, the roast beef, you know, restaurants.
Yeah, okay.
I lived in like this gated community with, you know, fairly expensive houses. And my neighbors all had these like mansion type homes. And this guy owned the Burger Kings, like 20 or 30 of them. This guy owned 30 McDonald's. Mm-hmm. And these guys all seemed to be in the fast food business. But all of the concepts were taken. And Arby's was not well known in California at all. So That failed because after we built three stores, we were up and running. Mm-hmm. We had contracts to build another two. The CEO, Len Roberts, who later became CEO of Radio Shack, got canned mm-hmm. by a guy named Vic Posner, who at the time was a pretty famous corporate raider. Like, I don't even want to say what I think about him right now, because for all I know, he'll come get me.
We don't want that.
I don't think he's alive anymore, but...
Better not to take chances. Sometimes those kids can be litigious, too.
Yeah, he was a scary dude. So Len Roberts, the CEO's plan was to develop Sacramento... pretty much the Sacramento, Northern California markets. Mm-hmm. And when you have corporate opening markets and you can open on their backs, it's a real win because they have massive marketing budgets. Mm-hmm. So if my stores were in between where theirs were, so that's kind of what I did. It seems really smart at the time. And then when Len got fired, they pulled out of that market.
Oh, so I'm nothing all by you myself. Did. It was just kind of just happened. Yeah.
Yeah. But if we're looking for lessons, it's unintended consequences. Sometimes we really think we're thinking things through, but I didn't even think about that happening.
Right.
And that was dumb because mm-hmm. I'm making a decision based on that. So how can I not? Right.
A big $1 million decision. You should be planning for all the contingencies, right?
Probably. Yeah. And now, you know, with age, you certainly learn and get perspective. And I've slowed down because I was always going a little bit too fast. And then we started this is a really cool idea, a company called Vital Records Management. Mm-hmm. And we developed a software to essentially track boxes. This is before stuff was digitized. So you actually stored physical records for title companies, lawyers, whatever.
I've seen some of those documents. Like my family's been in the mortgage business for quite some time too. And
really?
See how much stuff can come with one of those house sales.
Yeah. So we leased out, I think it was like an 80,000 square foot warehouse, spent a small fortune to put all the racks in. Mm-hmm. We bought a special kind of forklift that basically moved on tracks and it was automated. And barcoding was not a thing, but we barcoded every document in every box. And so the system, we could just put in XYZ title company records from this period, and the forklift would take our guy right to that location. And
that's awesome.
Pull the dock. And then we would deliver them physically because there weren't fax machines.
I know.
Well, there were fax machines, but they just weren't used that much.
Nobody had them. Yeah.
They cost like $3,000. I mean, which is really crazy.
Okay. So you've kind of touched on like looking younger, but you said you got 40 years of experience. Did you start when you were like six? Like you have 40 years of experience.
Yeah, no, I'm 65, 4 grandkids. So, but thank you.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I really do.
Grandkids are always the funnest, right?
Oh, they're amazing.
So which of those companies then was the one that you took public?
So after the three fails, because mm-hmm. the record storage company did fail ultimately.
I'm guessing that was just a timing issue. Actually, sorry, I'll go back to that. We didn't talk about how that failed.
So again, not thinking it through. Everybody we spoke with is like, yes, the industry needs this. Mm-hmm. If you can bring the prices down, you'll kill it. So we had all this confirmation. But the one thing we didn't realize is all of these companies had basically clawback clauses. So if they tried to cancel their agreement, then they had to pay one full year rent. Mm-hmm. So the amount of money it would have taken to get any of them from their current company to us, the buyouts were extensive.
I see. Yeah. Yeah.
Think about like an office building where a tenant wants to move, but the landlord said, sorry, you're in a lease and it's going to cost you 12 months to get out of it. So we bought several companies out, but it just became too expensive. The math wasn't making sense.
Yeah.
So I'll go on to your question. So then we started a company called RPM Mortgage.
And this isn't the Round Point, right? This is a different RPM?
This is, I'm not sure. Did Round Point buy
RPM? I don't think, I think there's a different RPM that was founded in California, which is the one I think I've had several loans through. Because I saw RPM in your bio and I was like, is that the same one? I went and did some research. I don't think it is, but it might.
It actually is.
Is it?
Yeah. And there's a long story how it got there, because we sold the company in 95 mm-hmm. and a huge lesson there. And shortly after we sold the company, the stock dropped from like several dollars to several pennies. And like idiots, we were still young kids. We took most of the sale price in stock.
Right.
Because, you know, we thought what we were doing could be worth a whole lot. So they ended up firing the CEO, who it turns out had pumped up the stock. Mm. It was very, very thinly traded.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was cool to be involved with a public company. So I just got too excited and, again, didn't do quite the research that I should have.
Mm-hmm.
But all of this led to the stock going into pennies. They fired the CEO. Our biggest shareholder, Cumberland, it was a company called Cumberland in New York. Bruce Wilcox, he's like a movie character. He was just like a surfer guy, surfed all over the world. That's all he really wanted to do. Mm-hmm. His hair was just long enough to get away with, right. You know, to be on Wall Street. and everything he said somehow related to surfing.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned so much from that guy. But he said to me, do you think the company can be profitable in X amount of months? Because they want to borrow money to make payroll, believe it or not. And I said, there's no way on earth the company's going to be profitable in 2 quarters. There's too many skeletons and dead bodies. And so he said, well, here's my plan. I'm going to give them the $2 million. And if they default on the loan, we're going to have exploding warrants, which was a new term for me.
Mm-hmm.
And what that meant was he had enough warrants, basically like stock options.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's like what you see with like SPACs. SPACs trade a lot of warrants, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So in this case, he had the right to capture if they broke any of the covenants. And of course they did. He exploded himself into 51% ownership in the company.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me 2 million shares to kind of stick it out. And then he put more money in, made it easier for us to raise money.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue was the company had been delisted.
Yeah.
Because the stock fell below $3.
Right.
So it took about, I don't know, maybe a year, and we actually got relisted on NASDAQ,
mm-hmm.
which was really like going public all over again. Because when you're delisted, so it was same, all the same forms, everything, and we did it.
Mm-hmm.
So, apparently not a lot of companies are successful doing that.
I don't know that I've seen anybody come back from the dead like that. That's usually I think there'd be a lot of short sellers looking to try to capitalize on that.
Not a bad idea. So they, NASDAQ first declined us.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife talks about this story a lot. This was years and years ago, basically in my underwear. Sorry for the visual. with a carton of ice cream.
Right.
Standing at the landing of the staircase. She's like, what's wrong? I go, we lost. We lost. We're not going to be listed.
Mm-hmm.
So another good lesson, don't give up. You don't really have to take no for an answer. You just don't. So I think it was her that said, well, can't you appeal this? And I was like, yeah, but it's probably a waste of time. So I went down my negative path.
Mm-hmm.
But again, went flew out, spent time with all the executives and officers of NASDAQ. And they grilled me for 2 hours. And they literally told me right there, we're gonna list you. We think your story is different.
Wow.
So
behind every successful man.
Yeah.
Beautiful, loving wife.
Oh, she saved me so many times. In fact, the stock went from that point, we got relisted at $3. Stock went to $18
mm-hmm.
in a matter of just not a lot of months, just a few months. And one day in particular, they were talking about it on CNBC. The ticker just kept going by. And I was meeting with one of our board members, and I didn't know anything of this was going on. And when I walked in, she had this look in her eyes,
mm-hmm.
standing at the same staircase. She goes, did you sell your stock? I was like, no, you don't just sell your stock. You know, you got locked up shares. You had to file. And she goes, sell it all now. And she had never really looked at me like that,
right.
or talked to me like that. So I remember calling the attorney and I said, how many shares can I sell right now? And he said, well, if you file the form, I think it was 144,
mm-hmm.
you can actually sell up to 1 million shares. So we sold 500,000 and I still get mad at myself for that.
Right.
Like, I should have just sold it all because you got caught up. It was the whole .com thing.
Right.
And we were in the right place at the right time. And you start thinking it's you. or you're smart, or it's your business model. And it was really none of those things.
Or you start seeing in your head like, oh, and that goes to, you know, 10x or 100x. Like you start getting that greed starts picking in.
That's why I told her. I said, it's going to go to $100. Why would we sell it here? That's what you sell it.
So if she hadn't done that, would you have sold any of it?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Yep. If I'm being honest, I don't think I would have. Although all the charts, everything would have said,
right,
sell it. I mean, you have this parabolic rise over a 3-day period. This is not sustainable. I'm talking like an $8 gap up one morning. You know,
it's right. Just,
that gap's going to close.
So you've done quite a lot of stuff in the industry. It sounds like you had quite a few like startup companies and like actual businesses that you've run. Are you trading during this whole time too? Or are these taking up your full time and like that's more of like just kind of a hobby?
So the latter, I never stopped trading though. Mm-hmm. And in, I think it was 99 or 2000, I said to the board, we should hire somebody more mature and smarter than me. Because I'd always read that CEOs get in their own way when they're young. They don't know how to take it forward. And
little Zuckerberg.
That was also a mistake because we brought the wrong guy in. Anyway, when we
did
brought him in.
Did you get to at least be part of the selection process, I would hope?
Oh, yeah. No, it was 100% my idea. Mm-hmm. 100%. We had a new baby coming. I was traveling all over the place. We had shareholders internationally.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just tired of it. It was really a long project. And yeah. Now I had quite a bit of money, you know, at that time, relatively speaking, it was a good amount of money.
That's still a lot of money nowadays, I would think.
Yeah. So I retired.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started really, really trading. I was trading futures in the beginning and I developed a system, not so much an indicator back then, but a system called Flight Station, which we began selling to traders all over the world. We had a network of people that were trading that system. So that was pretty cool.
What was it based on? Or can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah. So
we have a lot of futures traders that listen. That's what I like to trade too.
Yeah. So what we talk about is what we have now, because we have still called Flight Station, but it's mm-hmm. like on steroids. So what I had done before. But it really had to do with various indices on various time frames all triggering at the same time. So, you know, mm-hmm. if you think about it today, it doesn't sound like that big of a deal, but we, you know, you had four different things that had to happen, and it would give a buy signal that was pretty accurate.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Save a little more this month. Chime checking accounts have features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe and no monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply.
So you're looking at like all the markets and looking for broad strength or broad weakness across all of them and looking for that for your indication that,
yep,
hey, the headwinds are this way. This is probably the easier trade to take.
Yep, exactly. And
I like it.
I'm sure that still works today.
Yeah, I would think so. A lot of people look at the other markets for correlations. I know we look at bonds a lot and the dollar.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we've gotten to the point where we trade live with our members twice a day. And mm-hmm. it just kept evolving. And we're trading our indicator, which is called Flight Station. And it was almost an accident how this came to be, because I still don't know how I did it. Mm-hmm. Because we just kept, no, do this. No, do that. A really smart coder. And everything I said he would do.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day we're like, holy crap, this thing catches the top and bottom of every move. And it was 1,200 lines of code. that it works. It works super well. But what happened is now when we're trading live, we're scalping and we're on the, we're on the 1 minute chart. And we literally, I have a trade, a head trader named Lee Scott. He trades with the in the morning group. I trade in the afternoon group. And we're literally saying, okay, if this candle closes here, I'm going to go in. And I've got, I've got today's SPY 5-10 strike price, whatever. And so they all get it all set. And then I literally say, I'm going in, I'm in. So they follow. And then I'm narrating the whole trade while we're in it. And then I say, I'm coming out because of this reason. So,
I am not a fan of signals. I've been pretty outspoken against them since I basically figured out what they are. And like my biggest issue with signals is that nobody's learning anything if you're just, if they're just following what you're doing. And I'm going to give you a appreciation here because I watched your introduction video on YouTube. And while the website, I think, has some marketing, marketing ease to it that I don't really like to see, the selling of dreams kind of idea, like it's easy, you just, you can do it. But the speech that you gave, what you were talking about was taking your time, learning the information, showing the methods behind it, and then actually providing like a structure to it. And I can get behind that. And I wish that would be a little bit more prominently featured on your website.
So we have a brand new website coming out like any day. We're just having a hard time with, with the servers. It's done. And I don't think you're wrong. Because I don't want to be that guy that's leaning on the rented Lamborghini in front of somebody else's mansion. It's not who I am.
Well, you know, just as well as anybody else does, how hard it is to trade. Maybe your setups are simple and easy to execute, but the actual execution part, that's up here. And there's a lot of work that's got to be done in order to do that consistently and faithfully. And
yes,
you know, you're taking the third or fourth stop in a row and you get your A plus setup. Can you still pull the trigger? That's not easy to do.
I agree. So we do teach more than anything. We have a 30 module course, four live training classes every week. And the saying within our organization is slow is fast. If you remember the story as a kid, the tortoise and the hare, the tortoise always wins. And so number one, we demand to the extent we can, because it's a free country, that you paper trade for at least 2 weeks. And then we want you to show us, you know, what your win rate looks like when you're paper trading. Then one contract. That's it. One contract. And when we're trading live, we only trade SPY. I didn't finish that thought.
Oh, yes.
That's because
only the indexes.
Yeah, because you know, you could be trading Tesla and it could be running and then the NASDAQ is selling off.
Right.
It's only so long until the gravity is going to take effect. Mm-hmm. So we figured, because I'm passionate about only trading with the market, I know that's a big duh, but you'd be amazed how many don't do that.
Yep.
Only trade with the market. Well, S&P is the market. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to pick the right stock. And it, our system still provides 2 to 4 really good setups each session.
Mm-hmm. That's morning and afternoon?
Yeah.
Okay. That's plenty of opportunity.
Plenty. So slow is fast. Even though when you first start trading live, I may say I'm buying the 5-10, which might be a 45 delta.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say, you know, new guys, why don't you buy this one? I know it's only a 15 delta, but it only costs 15 cents. Because I don't want you thinking about winning or losing, because you're just now learning how to execute with real money.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, then work up to the same deltas. But one contract until, and I don't care how much money you have. This is really an important point because I've seen a lot of rich guys just eat it.
Uh-huh.
Like enough that they can really regret it.
Yeah.
So once you're up $300 to $500, which is not a lot, but you're up, you can trade two contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you're up $1,000, you can trade four contracts. So
you have a scaling plan.
Only gearing up with the house's money.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I found can impact favorably mindset more than anything. Because what you said is 100% true. I don't care how good the system is. If you bring bad habits or whatever, fear, greed, FOMO, it doesn't matter how good I am. I can't help you.
Right.
So I do have a video on YouTube. I think it's called "It's Time to Stop Losing Money," and that's all we talk about is mindset in that video.
Oh, I love that. What was it called again?
It's Time to Stop Losing Money.
I'm going to make sure I link that.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, and then we announced 2 to 4 swing trades per week. And some weeks, none. Mm-hmm. I put out a daily market report every day. And if I don't like the conditions of the broader market, I'm not going to announce a swing trade.
Mm-hmm.
So, but still, I would say on average, probably two trades per week. We're in those on average of 1 to 15 days. I usually buy contracts 30 to 45 days out. And we try to just buy and sell, buy options, because we constantly have new members coming on board. But then we have an advanced group where we'll do verticals and iron condors and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But again, we ask people, don't even take the swings until you really understand what the signal looks like on the 1 minute chart,
mm-hmm.
because it's going to look exactly the same on the 1 hour. And we trade the 1 hour for our swing trades.
Mm-hmm.
And our system works really good on longer term charts. But they have to know support and resistance. They have to know what a channel is. Mm-hmm. So we spend a lot of time teaching those things because, and you know this, and probably most of your listeners do, I get a buy signal. It looks beautiful. Our system actually measures the strength of the signal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a 90%. I love it. But I'm sitting right below massive resistance.
Right.
I'm not stupid. Like, right. You know, I don't care how good the signal is. It's not probably going to go well.
Yep.
So we wait for the break. And the 1 minute candle, still have to have the buy signal. 1 minute candle closes above the line. Then we go in. So that's where I think
confirmation.
You need that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indicators by themselves are never magical. And I think that's something that a lot of people fall into, that trap. Like, they want this magic thing that's going to tell them 100% success rate. They're always going to be right. All they have to do is just click the button when they see this thing fire. And there's always nuance to it. There's always nuance. And you got to have some of that knowledge, and you got to have that chart experience with those tools to really understand like how they move and how they work.
Yep. And even with the signal... By the way, you could make money doing what you said, but mm-hmm. most people don't have the mindset, because every time you try to trade it when it's range bound, you're going to get whacked.
Yeah.
But the wins are so much bigger than the losses with the system.
Mm-hmm.
Still, it's not a good idea to trade every signal. It's not good for you. You're not learning anything, as you said. And then now, like, as several hundred people are trading live with me, it's mm-hmm. kind of done something to my mind. I don't know if it's good or bad, but I actually have anxiety every single time we start. And it usually doesn't go away until, you know, the first trade.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
I know what you're talking about. You're worried about everybody else now. It's not just you. Now you got people listening and doing and acting on things that you say. And that's a lot of pressure.
It's really scary. Even if it's a 10 cent loss, I'm like, oh. Yeah, I'm apologizing. I'm crying. I'm, you know, I wear it all on my sleeve. So we've added two different things for confirmation. And I'll share these things because they're pretty powerful if you're trading on a short-term chart.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is the choppiness index.
Mm-hmm.
It's an indicator on TradingView.
I don't think I've heard of that one.
It's non-directional, but the chop index has to be dropping if the trade's really breaking out.
That so makes sense.
It's really good. It's like, to me, one of the most understated indexes. Mm-hmm. We have it built into the signal. It's about, I think, 5 or 10% of our overall signal, but it's so powerful, we also watch it by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is called CNB Scout, and it's also really good.
Is that also on TradingView?
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm a huge TradingView fan.
Oh, I love TradingView. I don't know what
you, just
I love TradingView just for the charting. I don't do my trading on it, but I love using it because it's so simple. You can pull it up on any computer. All this stuff is saved.
Yeah, we're the same.
Mm-hmm.
We like people to paper trade on the screen just because they're not having to think about executing at the broker level. Mm-hmm. I want them to only think about the signal entering and exiting.
I love, too, the focus that you put on the exits and not just the stop losses. But one of the other things that I saw featured heavily in one of the recordings that you did was that the plan for exiting, whether that's taking profits or you're getting stopped out, like, you have a plan for the exit.
Yeah, you have to.
I think that's missing from a lot of people because you end up in the situation that you were at with the mortgage company where stock just went up to $18. You don't have an exit plan. What are you going to do?
Right.
Just sit there and hold it and watch it go back to zero.
Yep. Had I had my trader hat on while all that was going on, it would have changed everything.
Right.
Probably would have sold it all. But I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you probably.
Exactly.
So I have no regrets.
Well, before we run out of time here, let's talk about the trading bots then, because I want to just kind of ask you like how they work, what they are, and why. Like, why are you doing this? If you have a machine or a bot that makes money, like why even sell it then? What's the point?
The point is, you know, we have a business and, you know, it's become, you know, a real company. Like, I don't know, 5 people on the support team, 6 sales guys, 2 appointment setters. We spend $50,000 a month on Facebook ads.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a machine and we make money selling the bots. Yes, we could just trade bots, but that's not my business necessarily. Mm-hmm. I do have money in every one of the bots that we have. And we have very, very strict criteria in terms of what bots that we offer. And so we have 5 now.
Mm-hmm.
They vary in terms of with these bots, with anything, with any system, drawdown is more important than profit.
Right.
And a lot of people get a little too excited about, you know, the profit potential.
Variance is huge.
Yeah. And so you start thinking a 50% drawdown won't bother me. So if I'm up 10 and then I give back 50, I'm still up 5. So you won't feel that way. Trust me.
People don't realize, I think that's another thing that the new trader doesn't understand is how those percentages work, where a 10% drawdown is going to take you higher returns than 10% returns. Because if you lose 10% of $100 is $90, but 10% return on $90 is 99. You're less than you started with. You need an 11% return to make that up.
That's true. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So our 2 best bots, well, let's talk about our best bot. It's called Aviator.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a pilot, so everything's got like a flight feel to it.
It's funny. I've heard pilots make good traders because they're used to working with checklists.
Yeah. Well, do you know who Chuck Hughes is?
The name sounds familiar, but
Chuck, he's getting old. Like I'm old, but he's old. And, you know, he moved to Carmel. I think he's just less relevant now, but he still has a team and he still has the machine going. But Chuck was an airline pilot and he went on and won, I think, 4 trading championships.
Oh, wow.
And in one of them, he made $4 million of real money during the contest.
Wow.
So, yeah.
What's the starting bank? Don't they start with like 200,000 or something like that?
Yeah, it's a big number. Yeah, exactly.
That's a pretty impressive return. And that's not like a year long competition either. It's only a few weeks or days.
I'm not sure because I know there's several of them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like his was longer. I feel like it was maybe a 90-day contest.
90. Okay. It's still 4 million and damn.
That's a big number. And yep. I'm sure everybody's thinking, well, what does he do?
Mm-hmm.
He sells low delta debit spreads. That's what he does. Like I'm a credit spread guy. Doesn't really matter, I suppose. But what he has found is that if you go way deep in the money, well, it's obvious, you know, you're just not going to be as swung by time decay and some of the other things.
Mm-hmm.
But that's his program. It just takes more capital because these deep in the money deltas, super high deltas are expensive to trade.
Yeah, but they also protect their value a lot better too. That's his point. I trade a lot of, or what I've been digging into or learning is I've been learning options with Eric Smolinski. We do a collaboration and kind of, he's been teaching me, kind of mentoring.
Nice.
But one of the ones that we've been looking at or that I've been dealing with a lot is the ratio diagonals, where you get a really deep in the money long calls and then you sell short calls against it, but at a ratio so you don't cap your upside.
Yep.
That's one of the things I really like about that strategy is that even if the stock doesn't really move, you can still generate a return on it.
Yep.
And if it does take off, you're not at risk. You're not capping your upside like you would with a spread.
Yeah. No, that's a very good structure.
Yeah. I love that one. So let's go back to the trading bots then again.
Oh, yeah.
So are these are actually like you hook them up to an account and they're executing for you, correct?
Yep. And to our slow as fast, we really ask every person to just run it on a demo account for 30 days. Don't be in a hurry. If you're worried about our money back guarantee expiring before you've gotten to finish it on a demo, I don't care. Just let me know and we'll extend that out. I'd rather you be careful than anything else. And I don't care if you have 100,000 you want to put in the account. I'd like you to put 2,000 in there.
Right.
And let it run up. Start
with a really small amount and get used to how it runs and how it works and how it
goes. But this bot has not had a losing month in the last 7 years. So it's a really steady, stable bot.
Tell me about the development of those then, because we have some guys that are playing around with trying to create their own bots in our Discord. One of the things that we learned from talking to some people who worked with high frequency trading algorithms is that like simplicity is the king of all. Like most of the programs they run at like hedge funds, like you could write the basic idea like on a cocktail napkin. Like that's how simple these things are.
It's true. A lot of them are most of the complexity is about the layering of orders and layering out. So it's more of the stop loss type stuff, and profit taking is where the it could literally be price crosses the 8-day moving average.
Right.
And then, you know, a martingale or one of the grid systems can kick in from there. That's not ours, but that actually can work.
Martingale, I hear that. It scares me. It works until it doesn't.
Martingale can be super scary. You have to have really good controls around it. Mm-hmm. But so our bots are a little bit more complex. We have a full-time developer. But the bot that I'm talking about, I'd been watching it for a really long time and just like, wow, this is actually outperforming all of our bots. So I called the developer and started trying to negotiate buying the code. And she's super bright. And I'm like, you could do another one. You know that, right? And
right.
You can even keep yours and keep selling yours, but just sell me the code. So long story short, she never would sell me the code, but we collaborated on another bot that's very similar to hers and then branded it with our branding Aviator. So we can fall back and lean on that history of her bot.
Right.
So, yeah.
Oh, I like that. I was going to ask too, like what the typical lifespan of a trading bot is, because market regimes change over time, like conditions change. Like what's the typical lifespan of one of these? But it sounds like the Aviator one's been around for, you said, 7 years and performing well.
Yep. And you probably know about MyFX Link, MyFX book. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing to know, because MyFX book is the best way to really monitor whether the people you're dealing with are good or bad, because you can hook your account up to MyFX book and it continually sends every single result and trade. So if you look at the results on my FX book, they're going to be exactly the results on my MT4 or MT5 account. Mm-hmm. And I cannot mess with them. I can't change it. There's nothing I can do about it. Right. So
there's no cherry picking the data.
So it's pretty straightforward, honest way. But Aviator gets an update, you know, just finishing a pretty big update. So about every year. Mm-hmm. And there's little things. They're not little, but, you know, like if the Fed's going to speak, do you really want to have your bot on around Christmas time? Like usually around November 15th, things could start getting kind of weird. And then by the time you get to the holidays, you just don't want to be in any bot.
Well, one of the things I heard someone mention is that like you want to be trading when people can choose to trade, not when people are forced to trade. So like the first 5 minutes of the open, the last 5 minutes before close, maybe even the last half hour before close, like maybe you're better off just kind of sitting out. And because the people who are transacting during those times they don't care what the market is doing. They just have to make the trades that they have to make. And when that happens, technical analysis isn't going to do much for you.
Exactly. So we have like in fact, Aviator, we found that it trades the Asian and London market much better than it trades the New York markets, which is interesting to me. So we now have a click of a button where you could choose to just turn it off for the New York session. And we actually suggest that now. The results have been way better.
Well, the London and the Euro sessions have just been cleaner opportunities lately. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they're not getting as whacked as much.
Right.
So, and then, we now have we have built into the system the ability to see and manipulate everybody's bot. And that may scare a lot of people. So in the sales process, we talk a lot about it. If they ask us not to do anything, that's fine. It's just a form. but we can shut the bot off, you know, let's say by December 2nd or something. And that's what we do. We literally just shut them all off. Mm-hmm. And this particular holiday season, we had three or four people that one drawdown on the bot. One drawback is they do tend to carry unrealized losses, mm-hmm. and they can carry those for a while. And you, when you have the bot for a while, you just get used to that. When it closes mm-hmm. a trade, it's probably going to close it at a profit. It's been winning 85% of every trade for this long. That's not going to change. But we mm-hmm. had a couple of members that said, well, I'm down whatever. And if I turn off the bot, I have to close the trades. And that takes an unrealized loss to a realized loss. Absolutely true. My advice is, so what? You know, you don't want to have.
Sometimes you got to take those losses. Yeah.
So we had a couple of people not listen and they were badly hurt. Mm. So, yeah. So that's why we decided, let's just control them for people. Let's just mm-hmm. turn them off, but get their approval.
I got one other question I wanted to ask you about or to talk about, but it's kind of a completely left turn. It just kind of,
it's okay.
Do you still do stuff with mortgage industry? Like you still, I think I saw you host a podcast.
Yeah. So every single morning for the last 17 years, I've done what's called Rate Watch. Mm-hmm. And your family may know of it if they're in the industry.
They're really big fans of the Habibs, Barry Habib and the MBS Highway. Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, I've talked to Barry and his son a couple times.
Yeah. I like Barry. He's a friend. We don't compete with Barry. We don't sell anything like that. We do have an app, but it's not what Barry does. But I do give updates every single day, telling people what I think the bond market's going to do, whether they should lock or float for their borrower. And mm-hmm. that's just been super successful. And in fact, probably as much as we spend on Facebook ads, still 70% of our members are in the mortgage business.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But we just sponsored. We are the platinum sponsor of a conference called Momentum Builders, which mm-hmm. was in Vegas. Pretty much really a high producers conference.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Because we're pretty well known in that industry.
Well, the question I wanted to ask you then is, with the rates being so high, and this is a, I wouldn't say argument, but I've tried to talk my dad into this and he won't listen to me. He wants rates to come down before he goes and looks to buy a new house. And I'm trying to explain to him that when rates come down, everybody who's waiting for rates to come down is going to go buy a new house. And whatever you save on the interest rate, you're going to lose on the increased cost because there's only so much supply.
Bingo, winner, winner, chicken dinner. just bought another property. I mean, you are mm-hmm. so right. I refuse to ever get in a bidding war for anything. I just won't. Mm. I won't do it on principle.
It's nice to be on the other side of that, though, when you're selling a home.
Of course, yeah. but even the home we bought, there were two other backup offers. Mm-hmm. So imagine if that's happening with an 8% rate, what's going to happen with a 4% rate? It's right. It's going to be psychotic. It's going to go crazy. Just the macro mm-hmm. demographics. You're on the later side, but you're still a millennial. You guys are all having kids and buying homes. It's going to get crazier, I think. So I agree with what you're telling your dad.
All those nice things you said about me, and then he had to throw in that millennial.
Sorry, huh? You're a good millennial.
No, I still subscribed. I still claim Gen X.
You do?
Well, I claim that. I don't know.
You're probably a little.
I was right on the cusp. It used to be Gen X, and then they redefined millennial and stuck me in there.
Yeah, my oldest daughter is just turned 40. So she says the same thing. I'm not a millennial.
I'm not a millennial. So, okay, let me in with that.
And then I'm not a baby boomer.
No, you're not.
I'm too old. Well,
are you? You're close.
Yeah, I'm on the younger side, but I'm definitely a baby boomer.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we hit most of my questions here. Do you have anything else you want to say before we wrap this thing up?
I would just say I really enjoyed this interview. I love your questions. I love your style. I really do. Mm-hmm. I'm going to become a regular listener because I can see the direction you're going for your listeners, and mm-hmm. it's really awesome. So
yeah, we try to shine a light on this, the side that nobody talks about. Everybody's always talking, like you said, about the Lamborghinis and the big deep bank accounts and the always winning, never losing. And we talk about the losing side of it. Cause guess what? Like, everybody's going to take losses. You're going to take losses. You're going to have hard times when you're in this, and how you navigate that is going to ultimately determine whether or not you're successful. Huh? And the more people that talk about it, the more people become aware of it when they get into it and they're not blindsided by it.
Yep. I totally agree. If you come in knowing it's going to be tough, you're going to do much better. If you come in thinking it's a piece of cake, you'll be disappointed.
Or you'll be humbled.
One or the other. Yeah. And we've all been there.
Yeah. So one last time then, where can people find you? Go ahead, list anything you want.
You can email me at dan@universityofoptions.com, or you can go to our website, which is universityof.com, www.university.com.
You want to plug the podcast, RateWatch?
I feel like that's so mortgage specific, but if you join our, it is a very detailed bond market report.
We have a lot of bond traders. So if you're talking about bonds, I think they might be interested.
So that report comes with a membership to Mortgage Coach, which is now called Trust Engine, which you probably know of.
That sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. They're big and great. That's who I do Rate Watch for. Mm-hmm. Actually, they're chief economist.
Oh, okay.
So, and have been for a long time. So Facebook's the best way.
Okay.
And I know you millennials don't like it, but I'm sorry. Cheap shot. But it's true. It is a baby boomer tool.
I used to be into it. I got away from it just because there's too much toxicity on it these days.
Oh, God.
But that's all social media. They're all like that.
I could get real political if I start talking about that, so I won't. But you're right.
It's too easy.
It's too easy. Then half the listeners will hate me.
Yeah, exactly.
The other half will send me Christmas cards.
Right. Until you flip and make fun of the other side.
Which I like to do.
Yeah.
So our Facebook group is Trade Like a Wall Street Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And I post Rate Watch there every day.
Perfect. I think I've got all those links. I'll make sure that they're definitely in the episode description.
Just thought of something else. Sorry. Mm. We also, our newsletter used to cost money.
Mm-hmm.
And a few months ago, we decided to make it free. And that is a really detailed economic update on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. And then how did the economics of the market affect the actual markets? And then I give 6 stock picks every Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a really good win rate on those. So it would make sense to become a member of that newsletter.
Especially if it's free. Love free, right?
Yeah. Free's good.
You know, we used to do, when I used to host this with my friend Dan, we used to every week try to pick a stock and compete against a random stock.
That's fun.
Man, that's not as easy as you think it is.
No. That's none of it is.
It's pretty humbling sometimes.
Yeah.
Have some no-name stock below a 50% return, and then you're sitting there like trying to eke out 5.
Yeah, those are the ones that'll do it. We just bought Jagex, JAGX, because I looked at it. The fundamentals are unbelievable, and the analyst ratings are unbelievable, and it was trading for 6 cents. And I'm like, I don't trade penny stocks, but these things don't go together. You never will see a 6 cent stock. So we bought a bunch of it last week. Our members did too. And it doubled. It was up 160% yesterday.
Yeah, it's trading at 13 now.
Yeah. So we bought it at 13 cents. I think in the summertime, it was like $6.
Yeah.
And I think it belongs there based on the fundamentals. So I think that's a pretty decent thing to look at.
Healthcare is always scary, but yeah. Looks like an interesting one. Okay. I got to wrap this thing up though.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
That's okay. But it is time to say goodbye, I think. But as we did say, if you enjoyed today's conversation, you still want more, you can always check out our guest directory, browse through all of the amazing people that we've had the pleasure of speaking with in the past. I think that number is up to like probably getting close to 100 guests now. I'm going to have to go and count that because I'll have to send out a care package to the guy who ends up being number 100. If you'd like to learn more about what Dan has to offer, you can go check out universityofoptions.com. You can check out RateWatch. You can join the Facebook group, Trade Like a Wall Street Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of good stuff in there. There's also that newsletter that was mentioned. Make sure that you check all that stuff out. All those links will be in the episode description just for you guys. I'll be back soon with another exciting episode. But until then, if you got something useful out of today's discussion, then rate us, tell your friends, and have a great day.
Thanks, Kyle.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.